Without a doubt, childhood adversity gets under your skin. The real stories of trauma found in that sterile word adversity are very disturbing to think about and even talk about. The situations are sad, bleak. There might not be a happy ending. The words resilience, perseverance will come up frequently in this hour. Clinical psychologist Meg Jay is here. She is an associate professor of education at the University of Virginia. Her new book is titled Supernormal, The Untold Story of Resilience. Meg, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start out with really unpacking the word resilience and how you use it to frame your book, Supernormal. What are we talking about with this word?
Well, what resilience means, according to the APA, is adapting well after adversity. And we can come back to that in a minute. But what I talk about a lot in the book is that I think the way we use it every day in conversation is a lot more simplistic than that. We say that people who are resilient, they bounce back or they rebound. But adapting well after childhood adversity is really not like that. It's not a bounce back. It's more of a process that takes place over time and in a lot of ways is a heroic struggle.
You open the book with the story of Helen, who overcame hardships, including the death of her brother, her father's suicide, international injustice, yet she did not see herself as a resilient person. Why was that?
Yes. Well, that was actually my motivation, you know, my driving motivation for writing with the book is that I've worked with so many successful adults who have overcome more than you would imagine just by looking at them or talking to them. And when I ask them if they consider themselves to be resilient, they almost always say no. They say, you know, if I was resilient, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to a therapist, or if I was resilient, this wouldn't have been as hard as it has been. And that was really why I wanted to write the book, so that people could see that, you know, resilience and to bounce back, that it is difficult and it does take time to rise above some of the, you know, most difficult things that people face early on.
Why is that? Why do people not see themselves as resilient when they have overcome extreme hardship in their life?
Well, I think on both sides, at first, I think many people don't recognize their adversities as real. Well, they say, well, I wasn't in a war, or I'm not a refugee, not really understanding what the 10 most common adversities, significant adversities are that youth face every single day. And I think when people are educated about what those 10 are, they go, oh, so that was an adversity to have a parent who was an alcoholic, or that was an adversity to live with domestic violence. And a lot of people just don't know what that list is. And then for the reasons I said, they think, well, I didn't bounce back. It wasn't easy to overcome that, so therefore I'm not resilient. But I think resilience is a very misused word.
It's hard to talk about this, I think, right now without, in the back of our mind at least, seeing the headlines hour after hour, sexual harassment allegations coming out. Wondering in the context of this, the resilience of these victims, of these survivors who are now coming forward and talking about their experiences. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Actually, that's a great place to continue because if you listen to the way that they're talking about their own experiences, they don't say, well, that happened to me and I bounced back. No one has said that. What they say is, I'm a fighter, I'm not going to let this defeat me, I am brave, I am fierce. I'm thinking of Allie Raisman's memoir or Rose McGowan's memoir coming out. Those are the titles, I'm brave, I'm fierce. And what that really hints at is what Supernormal is all about, that it frames resilience not as a bounce, but as a heroic struggle, that it takes a lot of strength and courage to battle back against problems such as sexual abuse or sexual harassment.
You write that some social scientists argue that resilience is best understood as a phenomenon and not a kind of resilient trait in a person. Why is that?
Yes. Well, I really love that. I'm glad that that's where we as social scientists have come to on it, because I think for a long time, people imagine that resilience was a trait. It was something that you had or you didn't have. People either are or they aren't resilient. And then they started looking for what's the silver bullet, you know, what's the magic combination? Give me the two or three qualities that will guarantee success. And of course, that formula isn't out there. But what social scientists did was they agreed to say, call it a phenomenon. And a phenomenon is something you know it when you see it, but you may never be able to completely explain it. And I love the fact that social scientists were willing to say that's what resilience is. It's an outcome that you kind of feel like you know it when you see it, but it's a bit mysterious. And I think that's fair. That's right exactly where we should leave it.
Not a hard and fast definition that it can be perhaps unique to individual situations.
Exactly. That, you know, I think the closest to a formula that people are willing to give it these days is that I think people take the strengths that are within themselves or within their families or within their communities, and they use those to, you know, battle back or rise above their circumstances. But obviously those strengths would be different for different people. So for one person, it might be smarts or determination or work ethic. For another person, it could be, you know, a good relationship with a sibling or with a parent or a grandparent. And for another person, I was just in Chicago yesterday talking to the Boys and Girls Club. You know, a lot of people find strengths in their community that help them transcend what's going on maybe at home or in their neighborhood.
If you're just joining us, we're with clinical psychologist Meg Jay. She's an associate professor of education at the University of Virginia, and her new book is Supernormal, The Untold Story of Adversity and Resilience. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Did you face adversity as a child or perhaps as an adult? How have you coped? How has it changed you and your trajectory in life? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Meg, you say that contrary to the notion that resilient youth bounce back from hard times, what they do is, quote, much more complicated and courageous. Can you unpack this for us? What is going on?
Well, you know, the way I frame it in the book is really around the metaphor of the superhero, actually, and that came from my clients. And, you know, what they taught me, what I've learned from listening to people, is that, you know, they never say, well, I just bounced back from that. They often say, I fought back against that. So what you will hear people talk about a lot of times is that, you know, they find whatever strengths are theirs, and they use those as, you know, kind of superpowers to, you know, battle back or rise above. And different people will go about that in different ways. But I think one thing that's important to realize is that a lot of adversities young people live with are chronic stressors. And so they're really living in a low level of fight or flight, you know, day after day, even year after year. And so there really is this bodily and emotional sense of, I've got to fight for my survival here, or I may not make it through this.
These chronic stressors, how do you see them playing out over time for what you call these superheroes? Do they manifest over time? Do they, is it a compounding thing for them in their lives? And mm-hmm. Are they ever able to turn away from those stressors and have some reprieve, work on molding them, who they are as a human?
Right, yeah. So absolutely, if you think about the story of the superhero, you know, they spend their lives, they're dodging bullets and leaping over buildings, and it seems like there's always someone new to save or something new to take care of. And one of the struggles is, can that ever stop? Can they take a day off? Can the day, you know, can they stop being a superhero at 6 o'clock or on the weekend? And I think for a lot of resilient people, You live in fight or flight for much of your young life. You're living with chronic stressors, having an alcoholic parent or a mentally ill sibling or a neighborhood bully. Those are chronic stressors, and they're not one-day events. They're multi-day, often multi-year events. So people become accustomed to living in fight or flight because they need to, and that's how they survive. But then I think for a lot of adults, the struggle is, or what I see them come to my office for often is, okay, well, I've survived, but how can I thrive? You know, can I stop living this way? That there's a great quote that the art of being a hero is knowing when you don't need to be one anymore. And I think for a lot of people, the challenge of adulthood is, when can I put all this down and just have a, quote, normal life, get myself to a safe place and be a partner or a parent or the person that I would like to be without all of this.
Oh, so I've survived. Now what? You know, that is
exactly
perhaps the big question for them. And they look at themselves and say, wow, I got through this, but who am I?
Right.
And shifting that focus onto themselves and to developing their own life and their aspirations, that perhaps is a very powerful shift.
Very powerful. And the other powerful shift is shifting the focus from the adversity, from what happened to me, because that makes a lot of people feel abnormal. You know, that it's abnormal, people think, you know, to have the alcoholic parent or the mother who's in jail, that makes people feel different and alienated. But to shift it to the resilience of, hey, look at how I survived. What if it's not the case that I'm abnormal? What if I'm super normal? Because that helps people get out there with confidence and feel like I deserve an adult life that's worthy of all that I've worked, you know, to get here. So I think both of those shifts of thinking of what do I want to do with the rest of my life and, you know, I deserve a good life. I'm not abnormal is a big one for a lot of people.
Well, let's bring in a call now. Let's go to Frank in New Berlin. Hi, Frank.
Good morning.
Good morning. What would you like to share?
Well, I was listening when the question was posed as to what effect, you know, over time, suffering abuse or having that fight or flight stress situation, that low level fight or flight, dealing with that over time. And I was going to say that besides just the normal outcomes that increased stress will give you, I think the lack of confidence in that, what you just said, the feeling of otherness really holds you back from pursuing things that you might otherwise. I know I'm in my 50s now and I suffered systematic abuse and, you know, had all those other stressors as well, missing parent, alcohol, and domestic violence and all of it. But the abuse at a young age really, I think, attacks the confidence and makes you feel like you're always on the outside looking in. And that's very difficult to outlive and constantly remind yourself that, like you said, you know, this happened back then and I've got to, you know, I've earned the steps that I've taken to overcome it. But that, I would say the confidence and, you know, not feeling like you can give yourself permission to succeed is something that can be very difficult and hard to outlive.
And Frank brings up some interesting words, too, otherness and on the outside looking in. Meg,
right.
Go ahead.
Yes, Frank, I really appreciate your call. You're exactly the person I wrote this book for because I strongly believe that of course there are the physical manifestations of chronic stress, and you know we can do that in another question, but for most of the people that I've worked with, the sort of the driving force or what brings them into therapy or what causes them to struggle the most is that feeling of I'm not normal because of what happened, or I'm not as good as other people, or other people who didn't have this wouldn't want to be with me or wouldn't want to hire me or wouldn't want me to be a manager. And so that was why I wrote the book, and to say, no, that actually if you look at childhood adversities, the 10 most common, I won't go through all of them right now, but it's, you know, the things Frank mentioned, such as abuse in the home, alcoholism in the home, bullying, mental illness in the home, et cetera. If you add all the, just the 10 most common together, 75% of us will grow up with at least one of these, usually more, because one often leads to another and another. So the reality is that it's actually the norm to grow up with one of these adversities. And I really wanted, I know it doesn't, you know, easier said than done to take that feeling away of feeling abnormal, but I wanted to start to get the word out there that people aren't as abnormal as they think they are, that it's pretty darn much the norm to live with that, unfortunately, and to help people look at what did they do to get through it, to see themselves not as abnormal, but maybe as super normal, to give themselves credit for turning out better than people would have expected, for beating the odds. It's a very difficult shift, but as Frank is saying, it's one that really frees people up, because that feeling of otherness, of feeling of alien, which I have a chapter in the book called Alien, for that reason, it really holds, it's hard. It's very hard to live that way.
Well, Frank, thank you so much for calling in. This book about adversity is compelling and hopeful, but overcoming adversity is quite messy and extremely personal. There isn't a single path. We're learning about the internal struggles and how some people have made a life out of leaping over obstacles, literally and figuratively dodging bullets. Meg Jay is a clinical psychologist and associate professor of education at the University of Virginia. Her new book is Supernormal: The Untold Story of Adversity and Resilience. You can join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. What is your story of resilience? Or put it this way, what do you wish others knew about being resilient? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back in just a moment. Reflect for a moment on this quote. There is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you. The words of poet Maya Angelou. And this quote sets the tone. It tops chapter one of Meg Jay's new book, Supernormal: The Untold Story of Adversity and Resilience. We're learning about the stories of so-called supernormals, who are these ordinary people all around us forced by their circumstances to overcome extreme adversity. Author Meg Jay stays with us. She is a clinical psychologist and an associate professor of education at the University of Virginia. Your thoughts on perseverance, 800-642-1234. Have you faced adversity either as a child or an adult? What tactics have you used to cope? How has it changed you? Join in the conversation. Let's go to Kristen, who joins us from Baraboo. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So I had a rather adverse childhood. My parents were both in jail. My father was in prison. He was a drug dealer, definitely an alcoholic. My mother was brought up on child abuse charges, which actually weren't true, but we still had to go through that. My brother was severely burned, and all this happened before I was 12. And I overcame it. I'm actually a surgeon. And looking back, it was definitely difficult at points, but I feel like I learned very young that the illusion of control that we have over our lives is an illusion, and that you can deal with everything changing and you're okay. And I'm concerned now that my children, who have a very stable family, won't learn that until they're adults, and it might be harder to learn by that point.
Yes, people ask me that a lot, that a lot of times when I tell people what the book is about, they say, oh, I've got to read that. I want my kids to be resilient. And what you're raising is a really important point, that it's, you have to, you know, resilience is something that often develops over time out of necessity. And so I do think that parents worry that their kids aren't going to be equipped. And obviously, wouldn't assign difficulties to people's lives to develop that. But, you know, I think that what we can do as parents, and, you know, you're probably already doing this, but is to not make our kids' lives unnecessarily easy, and that, you know, we can be preparing them to be independent all the time, whether that's instead of doing their laundry for them, teaching them how to do their own laundry, or instead of you know, getting the leaves raked, having the kids rake the leaves. And I know that may not sound like real adversity, and it isn't, but it is practicing coping, you know, with, hey, this is the challenge in front of me today, and you just get used to rolling up your sleeves and digging in. And there's been a lot of cool research about how just regular exercise or taking on long-form projects like mastering an instrument or doing hard things in general, it does help develop that sense of, okay, like you said, when stuff happens, you just handle it. And I'm not saying that that's easy, especially with the adversities that you grew up with, but it's a similar state of mind, which is I manage whatever's in front of me.
And it's interesting, Kristen brings up that she rose to the profession of a surgeon, many years of schooling to do that.
Right.
Do you see this, Meg, in your practice and with what you know you call supernormals here, that they can become really successful people?
Oh, not only can they often do. And so I love Kristen's story, and that what you will see for many people is that, you know, by the time they scratch and claw their way to college, or they scratch and claw their way to that job, they're used to working hard. They're not expecting things to be easy. That's exactly the kind of person who can get through med school. That's nothing compared to what they've gotten through before. And so even though I'm not saying that growing up with lots of difficulties is a blessing, but there are positives that come out of it. Most people say, I wouldn't wish my childhood on anyone. However, I see ways that it made me stronger or more capable or more confident. And I don't know about Kristen's motivation to be a doctor, but you do often see that people who've been through hard times, they often go into the helping professions because they understand what it's like to be out there struggling in some way or another, and they often want to help.
Kristen, thank you so much for joining us. Let's go to Mary now in Milwaukee. Hi, Mary.
Hi, thank you. I'm a NAMI member, and as a parent, the world of adversity and perseverance has been near and dear to my heart. For decades, I've been aware of some people with mental illness, such as bipolar, schizophrenia, depression. They've been able to get on that enviable recovery road and others not. Do you have any thoughts regarding this community dealing with psychiatric disorders and their adversity?
I don't know about your specific community, but I do know that people need strengths within either, you know, their families or within their communities, especially if they're dealing with mental illness within themselves or within their homes. You really can't do it alone. And so I think, unfortunately, not all communities have equal access to those assets to grab onto. But the more that what's so great about NAMI is that the more that we can have places out there where people can both understand what they're going through or understand what a family member is going through and provide resources, not just for the person who's affected or who has the mental illness, but for all of those who are impacted by it, I think it's really important that in the book I talk about kids whose parents are mentally ill or whose siblings grow up with mentally ill siblings. And that's something that I think we don't talk about enough.
And Mary, can you tell us a bit more about what NAMI is?
NAMI is an organization which supports both consumers, those who with a diagnosis, and also family members and friends who are affected by the mental illness. I'd also like to put in a real strong word for an organization called SARDA. That's SARDAA, and it stands for Schizophrenia and Related Disorders Alliance of America. It's really big out there for people dealing with psychosis.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for calling in. Meg, oftentimes it seems that when people are carrying a burden of hardship in their past, or perhaps, as Mary has mentioned, psychiatric disorders that are someone is trying to cope with on a daily basis, a lot of their energy would be focused on working through that psychiatric disorder and the challenges that encompass it. What does that do to the relationships around that person?
Well, I think that for people who are resilient, they may or may not have, you know, any particular disorder, but they may have grown up with people who have disorders or who, as your previous caller said, are alcoholics or abuse drugs. And what I hear again and again from people is people look at me and they say, oh, you're so successful, you've done so well, this is so amazing. And clients will say, people have no idea how tired I am, that how much work it has required and continues to require to constantly be managing your boundaries with a mentally ill parent or an abusive parent or an alcoholic parent or a difficult neighborhood, that it really is constant management, that there may not be a point in your life where you go, hey, that's done. And I think we don't appreciate that enough, which was a big motivation for the book, that I talk a lot about how hard people are working day in and day out to be resilient. It's not something they just magically do.
Mary, thank you so much for calling in. Monique from Greenleaf called in. She wonders how people stuck in the fight or flight mode can get help. What is the path for someone who can't name and recognize adversity so they can't seek help on their own?
Well, a big part of the big motivation for the book for me is I'm a real believer in psychoeducation and, you know, helping people recognize what are the most common adversities that people grow up with. That may sort of seem obvious, but you would be surprised that, you know, if you know about the work of the ACEs, the Adverse Childhood Events, which is a very, you know, well-known questionnaire you can take of did you grow up with these. I cannot tell you how many people have said, I was stunned when I took that I had 4 of the 10 or 8 of the 10. But until you put it in a list form and you do the checklist, it honestly for a lot of people just hasn't maybe occurred to them or registered that what they went through was real adversity. So I think that's step one, is recognizing, hey, what I went through was legitimately difficult. I may not have been in a war, but this was legitimately difficult, and I have been living in fight or flight. To get out of that usually requires getting yourself to a safe place or a safer situation, and sometimes for many people this can't happen until they're in adulthood. But choosing a life where you can find some peace and learn to dial back the chronic stress. And people have different strategies for that, whether that's through therapy or yoga or meditation or running or knitting or reading. I mean, there's all kinds of ways that we can try to dial it down. And it's really important to do that because over time, chronic stress has many, many negative effects on your physical and mental health.
Let's bring in Esther now, who joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Esther.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Thanks. I'm calling. I was born in Xi'an, China, and was abandoned at a train station, and then also was born with a physical disability called spina bifida, which causes bowel and bladder impairment as well as affecting the ability to walk. And I was adopted at 5 to here, and I had to learn a whole new language. And since then, I've been in and out of the hospital with multiple surgeries. And the tricky part for me is there are triggers that cause me to think about, you know, being abandoned or not only my biological parents, especially my mom. And it saddens me. And then my disability, the health issues, it makes it hard to feel encouraged to go on and do things in life. And so in moments where I'm down, I cope by speaking with my mom, who is willing to listen to my honest thoughts. And I hug my stuffed animal that I really like. And I watch videos on surgeries or animals. And those things tend to help uplift me. I also have a faith in God. That helps me to believe that there's a reason for everything and to use my experience for the better. And in the end, it comes down to just recognizing when you're feeling these raw emotions, to just be in that moment, take mm-hmm. a deep breath, and then move on. Because for me, I see it as it's going to be a grieving process because it's like I've lost a parent, and or I've
right.
lost the ability to do physical things.
Esther, right. thank you for telling us the story. Meg, go ahead.
Esther, I really, really appreciate your story, and it's a great example of how there are adversities that I don't talk directly about in the book, but I talk about submitting. The idea was this is, you know, this is for you, whether yours specifically is discussed or not. But I love Esther's list of coping. She has a lot of strengths or a lot of, you know, smart strategic ways to know to manage chronic stress. So she talked about hanging out with her stuffed animals. She talked about reading, I think, or television, sort of losing herself, just being able to disengage from some of the negative thoughts sometimes, but other times to really be able to think about them and talk about them with another person. And as a matter of fact, one of the leading predictors of whether or not someone will fare well after adversity is whether or not there's someone who cares. The flip side of that being whether or not they feel alone, which is does not bode well as much as feeling like there's someone who listened to my pain or my sadness or my grief. And that's not easy for everyone. And I really appreciate the fact that her adoptive mother is able to listen to her feel sad about the biological mother she'll never know. Not everyone's willing to listen to that. And I think it's very helpful that Esther has that.
Esther, thank you so much for calling in. Meg, why are researchers so interested in studying children specifically, who have come out on the other side of adversity, of hardship? What can we learn from them?
Well, you know, I think what researchers have tried to do is a more systematic version of what we're doing here now, which is, hey, tell us, how did you do this? So what can we learn so that people who are growing up with something, or whose child is, or whose niece or nephew is, or grandchild is, that they have a sense of how do people do this and how might I also do it? So I think the motivation obviously has been to figure out what's the short list, although it's a pretty long list of those strengths that the person has or the family or the community. And those are different for different people, but kind of grabbing on to those and figuring out how to get through it.
The supernormals among us, they spend a lot of time attending to their trauma through so many coping mechanisms, and that sometimes makes a whole lot less stress, but also hard to let others get into their lives, loved ones, or even being able to shape the other characteristics of who they are. The book is Supernormal, The Untold Story of Adversity and Resilience. Author Meg Jay is with us. She's a clinical psychologist and associate professor of education at the University of Virginia. Your thoughts on this path of resilience? Is it even possible to walk in your shoes? How have you found a balanced life on the other side of extreme adversity? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return in just a moment. What does it take to conquer life's unfair challenges? A mentally ill family member, bullying, domestic violence, neglect, sexual harassment, sexual abuse, overcoming childhood adversity is a phenomenal struggle. It's the basis for the new book, Supernormal, by clinical psychologist Meg Jay. She studies the coping mechanisms of these supernormal people who are all around us today and through history. She's an associate professor of education at the University of Virginia. Virginia. Your insights on resilience, 800-642-1234. Did hardship in your childhood keep you from becoming successful or keep you from the person whom you would hope to be? How do you frame what has gone wrong in your life and what have you done to survive and to thrive? 800-642-1234. We have Diane from Minnesota who called, Meg, and she says she's a teacher and she wants to know about the role educators play in building a child's resilience.
That's a great question, and I appreciate it because I think that, you know, on the one hand, teachers already try to do so much with so little. You know, I hesitate to say that, you know, schools, you know, need to be doing more, you know, to help kids because they already do so much. But one thing I think it's important for teachers to know, and they probably already know this, is how much they matter. That I can't tell you how many students and clients I've had over the years that said that teacher who cared about me, that teacher who encouraged me, that teacher who didn't make me embarrassed about that free lunch that I got, that believe it or not, you could do more to help your students just by caring and being empathic if you happen to know what's going on. But if you don't, just by caring, because you never know who you're making a difference for. I think that, that in a way, schools might be worried maybe a little too much about how do we build resilience, or, you know, in terms of like, are there exercises we can do? I think actually what kids need are people who care. That's really the number one predictor for whether or not the kids in your classroom are going to fare well, no matter what's going on in their lives. And you will be very surprised about how many people you might be that lifeline for and you don't even know it.
And, you know, perhaps even smaller things like sharing in a group about what has happened today or yesterday in that child's life, or giving the child permission to talk about their personal life, mm-hmm. or journal writing for the older grades. What impact does that have?
Well, you probably remember, I loved this. This went viral a few years ago, and I thought it was just so beautiful that there was a teacher who, you know, gave out index cards and to young kids and in her class and had them complete the sentence, "I wish my teacher knew blank." And some people said, "I wish my teacher knew I hated math," or "I wish my teacher knew I could do a cartwheel." But some kids said, "I wish my teacher knew I haven't seen my dad in 2 years," or "I wish my teacher knew that my sister was sick." And so that was a really beautiful exercise in that it gives the teacher a window into, it gives the kids an opportunity to share, you know, privately and to let the teacher in if they're ready. And then, you know, I don't expect teachers to be social workers or psychologists, but just knowing that, you know, all 25 kids that you have, or, you know, how many ever in your class, they're not all the same. Some schools, including the school where my kids go, which is a local public school, the teachers do one home visit for every student, just so that they have a sense of, you know, where kids are coming from in the morning, because they're not all coming from the same home.
Let's go to Chris now, who joins us from Janesville. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thank you guys for having me. And I wanted to say thanks to Meg for being on the show. This is a topic that been on my mind a lot recently. So I guess I'm coming from, my experience is sort of just this, you know, low level stressors over the first 23, 24 years of my life. And I'm 25 now. And my resilience for a long time looked like walling up. I kind of looked like a little hermit crab in my shell and just focused a lot in the last 4 years on taking care of myself. And something that's been really hard for me is coming to terms with the fact that, you know, my traumas are still traumas, even if I haven't been through a war or a specific assault event. And I was wondering, yeah, Meg, what your opinion on the concept of complex PTSD was in these sort of cases, and how that concept,
right,
of smaller traumas can add up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. So what Chris is talking about, complex PTSD, is complex post-traumatic stress disorder, and I won't go down the rabbit hole of that particular diagnosis right now. But what she's getting at is that, first, I'll say that I tell all my clients and students, you can't compare adversities. That people will often ask me when they heard I was writing the book, oh, what's the worst adversity? Which one's the worst one to have? And I would have to quickly jump into educator mode and say you cannot compare adversities because the brain, think about it, the brain does not differentiate between a bear, a car crash, an abusive parent. It just knows danger, threat, stress. That's it. So the brain doesn't discriminate. We shouldn't discriminate. Living with chronic stress is living with chronic stress, no matter what kind it is. And as Chris is saying, it adds up. It's not just chronic stress. It's cumulative stress. So you could have, you know, whether or not you have one, you know, seemingly extreme problem that goes on for a year or two, but then you could have someone with four or five of these adversities, maybe that seem lesser, but over time they add up because they go on longer. So you really can't compare. And I think that part of the motivation of the book was to really educate people about that, about chronic cumulative stress, that that is real and that those are real adversities and they have real effects. And I think what people often find they need to do, it's usually around the transition to adulthood, you know, 20s, 30s, and so on, is to reckon with that of saying, okay, I get it. I have had all this adversity and this stress build up within me. Now I need to take care of myself. I need to try to unwind some of that so that I can be physically and mentally healthy and so that I can think about maybe how to have healthier relationships than the ones that I saw when I was younger.
And what about this feeling that Chris expressed, a feeling behind for her age because of these cumulative stressors?
You know, I mean, I think that, like you can't compare adversity. Mm. I think one of the wonderful things about adulthood is people shoot off in all different directions at different paces. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to go at the pace that's right for you. And it will pay off to address the cumulative stress, to dial it down and to think about what kind of life you want to have moving forward before you just jump into something. Because for a lot of adults, the task of adulthood is to figure out how to be a different parent, how to be a different partner, how to be a different person than the ones we saw growing up. And that takes a lot of intentionality. So I wouldn't worry about rushing as much as I'd worry or think about doing it in a way that's different than what you saw, in a way that's healthy for you.
Chris, thank you so much for calling in. Let us go to Linda, who joins us from Milwaukee. Go ahead, Linda. Are you there, Linda?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I'm currently 67 years old and have suffered from anxiety disorder probably almost all of my life. Mm-hmm. And in recent years have been diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder, have received medical care, medication, psychotherapy, and have tried mm-hmm. all kinds of complementary medicines as well. And I guess my question is that I'm feeling that I'm at a point in my life where I'd like to learn how to thrive and not just live day to day trying to manage this disorder, and sometimes feeling kind of hopeless that mm-hmm. That may not be possible at my age.
Hmm. Well, let me first say that I think what many people don't know is that resilient people often struggle. And, you know, the APA has a line on their website and on the resilience page that says the road to resilience often includes pain and suffering. So I'm not minimizing your pain and suffering, but I'm saying that I think that many people feel that, well, they couldn't possibly be considered resilient if they've had anxiety, if they've had depression. But in fact, you know, if you think about everything we've talked about in this program about chronic stress and cumulative stress, they almost always lead at some point to a mental health or a physical health struggle. So that does not disqualify you from being a successful or a resilient person, but it just means that, hey, none of this has been easy. And of course, what has happened in your life intersects with your own genetic loading. And often for people, OCD or anxiety, there's some genetic loading there. So I wonder if, you know, it's the case that you may be managing anxiety and OCD, you know, throughout your life, as many people do, whether they've, you know, had adversity in their lives or not. It becomes something that they're living with, but they try to live with it as well as possible to say, okay, this is a illness that I have or a disability that I have, but now what? And maybe accepting that it may be with you, but doesn't have to limit you maybe as much as it is right now, I do think is possible.
Well, Linda, thank you so much for calling in. Meg, what advice would you give for supernormals and for all people who have struggled with adversity?
You know, I think a big part of the healing for, you know, I'm assuming I'm talking to adults here listening, is to shift a little bit of the focus from the adversity to the resilience, from the abnormal to the supernormal, in that our brains are wired to focus on the dangers in our lives and the things that have gone wrong, that our negative memories tend to be stronger than our positive ones. But I find that it's very empowering for people to pay attention to not just what happened to them, but how they got through it. I don't mean look on the bright side of how this has been great, but what you did that was really strong or really savvy or really strategic or really courageous to get to where you are now. And that helps people begin to see themselves not as abnormal, but as supernormal, to focus less on the adversity and to not forget about the resilience of how they made it through.
Oh, so you're saying kind of flex that muscle again and again, make it an exercise when something works?
Yeah, or just to make it an exercise in terms of your perspective taking of, am I remembering when I felt hurt or terrified or upset, or am I remembering, how did I cope with that? What did I do? Remember how Esther, who called earlier, she had her list of things, the ways that she actively coped? I'll bet everybody who's called in today, if they thought about it, they could make me a very long list of all the things they did to get to where they are now. But for many people, unless you challenge them to do that, they haven't ever given themselves credit for all the ways that they have been courageous and strong.
Well, Meg, thank you so much for spending time with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kate. It was great to be here.
Meg Jay is a clinical psychologist and an associate professor of education at the University of Virginia. Her new book is titled Supernormal: The Untold Story of Adversity and Resilience. She's also the author of The Defining Decade: Why Your 20s Matter and How to Make the Most of Them Now. This Hour of the Morning Show was produced by Brianne Chasso and Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. She also provided technical direction. We can continue this conversation about adversity and resilience, perseverance, over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network, and thank you so much for listening.